the speakers,
please.
Lisa.
Thank you. My name's Lisa, I'm an addict. Thank you for the welcome, thanks for asking me to share. It's always a privilege and a pleasure. Do you know what? I've just come down off the train, and I've not been over to the convention yet, and I forgot for a brief moment that it was the convention this weekend. And I came in and I saw so many faces that I know, and it just like, oh, hi there. And then I realised, yes, convention's on. But what happened was, in that, I kind of had a lot of flashbacks and a lot of memories, and they've been good memories, which is a change. It's nice, you know, to come in and see people who, you know, was at the first meeting when they picked up a white, gave them a white key ring at the first meeting, and been on campouts with people here years ago, and done service with people here. There's people here that I've spoke to on the phone, and I've never met them in real life, and I've met them and spend some time with them. It's just really, you know, my topic is the dawn of a new reality. And I suppose I'm sharing that stuff because for me, that's a new reality for me to be able to walk in somewhere and get a lot of feel good, you know, factors, and have pleasurable, lots of pleasurable memories, and have connections with people. It wasn't always like that. And so it goes. I've been asked, I've asked Dean to time me, because I'll just go right on one, because I love this fellowship, you know, and I love our programme, I love our steps and our traditions and our concepts, so I can talk for the next month on this stuff without taking a breath. So I've asked for help, so please tell me at the right times, because I've done this before and the person just let me carry on, and I've been like, so please tell me, you know, I can ask for help today. I need help on a regular basis. And it's all right for me to ask for that, you know, and that's another new dawn for me, coming into this fellowship and actually realising that it's all right to ask for help, and that I don't have to have everything boxed, that I don't have to be perfect. And also I can ask for help and receive help and not have somebody want something back in return, you know, not be waiting for the payback moment. And that was, again, a new thing for me. I remember when I was first started coming to NA meetings, and I didn't, I suppose the dawn, you know, the dawn for me, it comes all of a sudden, but it's gradual as well. And I've had to learn a different level of self-awareness by being here, you know, and there's people in this room that have helped me do that, that have given me some of them massive moments of clarity where doesn't have to be that way. You know, it's been that way before, but it doesn't have to be. I remember going to a meeting early on, and I was travelling there with this guy, and I got a bus. That was the first thing I did in early on in recovery. I got a bus pass, so I was on benefits. I got cash my gyro, I got a bus pass straight away, so I had a bus pass. So you can't really sell bus passes, not where I live anyway. You probably can here, but up there, you can't, nobody will give you anything for a bus pass, so I couldn't swap it or sell it for gear or anything. So I knew once I had a bus pass, I had that, you know, once I had some credit on the shitty phone that I had, I was able to ring, not that I did ring people, I'd be lying if I try and be honest today, I don't always be, but I try. I didn't really ring many people when I first got here, but I remember being sat on this bus with this guy, going to a meeting, and he offered me, I think he had some Space Raiders or something, you know, standard using food, Space Raiders, bag of crisps, 10p, back then. And I was like, no, I'm fine. He said, do you like them? I said, yeah, they're obviously Space Raiders, pickled onion, of course, they're my favourite. He said, well, why don't you want one then? I said, no, it's fine. He said, I'm not going to ask you for something back if you have a Space Raider. And it dawned on me, do you know what? That's exactly why I wasn't accepting something, because I didn't want to have to do something in return for a fucking Space Raider. I have checked, I'm allowed to swear, so that's good. Do you know, and just that level of, wow, where have I been that I feel like I can't accept a Space Raider off a man because they might ask me for some kind of thing after it. And No, that's just one of the things. So I've just got off the train today, and I've come with my boyfriend, and he said, oh, we're in London now, aren't we? I said, yeah. He said, does that mean to say I can call you a cunt and it's all right? I went, no, it doesn't. Because a lot of you Londoners and Southerners, when I meet you in service, you're always saying cunt a lot. Not in my accent. Cunt, he's fucking canting me right now. So I said to him, no, you're not allowed to call me that at all, ever. Do you know, when I'm kind of saying that because today I'm in, you know, I have relationships with people that are respectful, you know, and intimate relationships. They don't have to be sexual, but I have intimate relationships with friends and women, which is a massive thing for me. And because when I first got to Narcotics Anonymous, I didn't much like women. They didn't really like me. And I've learned, you know, that I just, my first ever sponsor when I got here. So I've come from, I know I'm like time limited, so I'm going to miss a lot out, but obviously. So when I first, I'm that addict who thinks they're better than everyone else. I'll be honest about that. Never really thought I were worse than, even though I was worse than. My delusional thinking had me believing, sat in crack dens, that I was better than everybody in there, you know, and they were a bit, you know, a bit thick maybe, or a bit underprivileged. That's the kind of addict I was, and I was arrogant, fucking really, really, really arrogant. And you know, our literature talks about the delusion and the irrational thinking of addiction, and for me, I identified with that really, really quickly, really early on, because. Which was a revelation for me, because I'm a woman who believes they're always right. I think I'm really clever, I think I'm really logical, and I really believe that I'm always right. So to suddenly realise that actually my thinking was wrong was kind of a big smack in the face for me, because I'm really good at arguments, and I'll argue, I'm really good verbally, and I'll just annihilate people verbally without even... hopefully get into the physical side. So I'd always believe that I'm right about everything, and I came to NA and I heard stories and I related to them. So I'm the kind of addict that, for a start, I never smoked fags because they're bad for you, they obviously give you cancer, everybody knows that, you know. I've shared this a lot because it's just a good example of how mentally unwell I used to be and still can be. So smoking is quite obviously bad for you. It gets in your lungs. Everyone knows that it's addictive and you shouldn't really be doing it. And so I thought, going into places where people were using, where they had the curtains shut and all the windows shut and stuff, and I'd go in there, and you know when there's layers of smoke? Do you remember that? Layers of smoke when you go in. I'd go in and be like, oh my God, you dirty bastards. Dirty bastards, they'll be there with things, you know, on the go, and I'd be weighing up who I could sit next to and manipulate a bit. And I'd be like, open the windows. You're gonna make me ill. And then I'd say, like, right, okay, is there a spoon, and pass me that works bin and some scissors. And I'd go in the... because I truly believe that injecting drugs was a much safer option than smoking them, because you didn't get cancer that way, did you? So they use needles in hospitals, not the ones that have been used 80 times in a works bin, but that's the way that my mind justified it. I justified that I wasn't smoking, so I was better than it. No, it talks about that stuff in our basic text and in our step working guides. Feeling better than or less than, or, and that had me using for a long time, because I was so arrogant. My arrogance stopped me from asking for help, you know, and I see that today as part of my addiction. I went to CDTs a couple of times. Did I want help? I don't know. I wanted some free drugs so I didn't wake up ill every day. I wanted to be able to have, you know, not be ill, to be able to go on and do what I needed to do so that I could go and score. But they never really gave me what I needed to hear. And the only time I got that was by coming into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I got told different things going there. And I've learned from our books as well that it says many people tried to hurt or tried to help us even, and they hurt us. Many people tried to help us, but they were unaware of, you know, they didn't understand what we were suffering with. And how could they when we don't even know? You know, so I went to these places and they totally bought into my I'm better than attitude. So I'd go in and they'd say, oh, you know, you're a bit different than other people that come in here. You can do it. You know, you've got a lot of willpower. You're quite feisty. I mean, every girl that went in there were fucking feisty. I know that today. Do you know what I mean? I think they were just trying to boost me up, thinking that this would somehow make me stop. But they'd say, you know, you just need a bit more willpower. And I think, oh, okay, so what's that willpower? So what that did is it made me kind of question myself and think, well, maybe I'm a bit of a... If I can't stop and all I need is willpower, how do I get it? You know, am I a weak person? And internally, that's kind of the message that I gave myself and that I took from that I'm a weak, I must be weak and not to bother. And then they told me that I was... What I needed to do is go and get a hobby. People might be able to relate to this. Go and get a hobby because you've got too much time on your hands. So bearing in mind at this point, I'm 6 stone, crackhead, heroin user. And by the way, just to clarify, please, this is not a specific substance fellowship. Any drug is a drug, please, believe me. I had the same issues on whatever drug I took. No matter what drug it was, you know, cannabis, whatever. It was the same kind of patterns. So don't exclude yourself if you're new and these aren't the drugs. I'm just using this, it's my experience. I'm just as crazy when I smoke weed and greedy bastard that I am. So I'm about 6 stone, I've got a raging habit and I'm prostituting by this point, which people that know, you know, it takes up quite a lot of your time, a crack habit. And trying to get money for a crack habit. So I was sat in front of this woman who's telling me that I'm a bit bored and I've got too much time on my hands, thinking, fucking hell, really? Really? I'm busy. Trust me. I am busy all day, every day. Oh, you know, but I'm a people pleaser as well. I'm a codependent. I've had to do a lot of work on that in recovery. Very codependent. So I wanted this woman to like me. And so I did the things that she suggested. You know, I tried to sign up for college. I tried to get a hobby, salsa dancing. It's a fucking nightmare, trust me. So I'm walking into this college course. The only course they'd take me on was an alternative therapies course, and which included massage, reflexology and aromatherapy. So I'm like, by this point, I've put a bit of weight on, like 7 stone this time. And I've got track marks all over me and lumps and bumps where I've missed and stuff like that. And you've got to pair up and massage each other. Massaging each other means you've got to take your clothes off. So I'm in this class with all these 18-year-old dolly birds, you know, that are healthy. And no one wants to be my partner, obviously, because I've got track marks all over me. And I'm living the life of an addict, do you know what I mean? So not that attractive to be around. But I latch onto one girl because there's always a weak spot in a group. She becomes my friend. You know, but you know what? I had to use to go to them classes. I had to use before I went in because it was traumatising. Having conversations with normal people, asking me, normal girls at 18 going, well, what have you been doing all your life? Why are you doing this? And I'm shit at telling lies, so I just say, well, what it is, I'm a drug addict and I'm prostituting at night when I leave here. Because I weren't like fancy, I weren't going to say I'm an escort. It was obvious I weren't an escort. I was a brass, let's face it. And that obviously didn't make me much, you know, a few people got a laugh out of it. But it was hard. You know, my salsa class, fucking nightmare. It's boiling in them classes. You have to strip off, tie a vest top. Then you have to show your arms and your legs and stuff, don't you? So, again, not very attractive. Anyway, none of it worked, you know, and one day at the end of, I'm going to speed up now, because Do you know what? I had a good childhood. I knew right from wrong. I had good morals. Not everybody does have. I understand that. And that's the beauty of this fellowship. It's eclectic. Anybody's welcome here. You know, if you've got a drug problem, it doesn't matter about your background. It doesn't matter what drug it is. A drug is a drug is a drug. You know, there's no class A's or B's. I hear people sharing a lot about, then I got into class A's. I don't give a shit. It's all the same. Drugs are all the same. There's no class in this game, especially in this fellowship. But I had a good upbringing. But the thing is, I'm an addict. You know, I don't need to necessarily delve too much into why. Yeah, certain stuff went on that I'm sure had an impact on me psychologically. But I am just, once I start using, and it doesn't have to necessarily be substances either. I've learned over the years that it manifests in many different ways. I'm greedy and I want more. And it's like I get a trigger, you know, food's one of my things at the minute. And, whatever it is, you know, I could not put the drugs down. And one day at the end, close to the end of my addiction. So I've got to a stage now where the drugs, I didn't get rid of the drugs, by the way. I'll try and be honest about this. I did not wake up and think, I've really had enough of this using drugs. I think I'll stop. You know, our program says that any addict can stop using, lose the desire to use, and find a new way of life, a new way to live. And that's how it was for me. I didn't wake up and think, I've lost the desire to use. Brilliant. That's great. Let me go to an NA meeting. You know, the drugs actually fucked me off, if anything. They stopped working. I couldn't get them in my body the way that I wanted to get them in. You know, it's taking me sometimes 4 or 5 hours to get a hit. And the insanity was that I was praying to a God I didn't believe in. Please, please, just let me get this. Just let me get this in me, you know. And then hating on him. Fuck off, you bastard, when I couldn't get it. And, you know, and then I'd look out my window and I'd see a normal girl with a shopping and a kids. And I'd think, you fucking dickhead. What are you doing that for? That looks really stressful. You know, and I'd be the most stressed person. But my delusion told me that I was actually living the dream and felt sorry for people who were working and had jobs and mortgages and stuff and kids. And, you know, I suffer with a disease that tells me the opposite. You know, it tells me up is down. Friends are enemies. People who want to work me, they're my best mates and I'll die for them. Come and hurt me. I'll fucking die for you. I'll fight for you. I'll die for you. I'll go to prison for you. Be a twat to me. You know, and that's how it was in my active addiction. And, you know, the dawn of the reality for me is it isn't like that today. You know, I remember going into a library and finding a book on the 12 steps. And it wasn't an NA book, it was a generic 12-step book. I'd never heard of the disease of addiction, ever. I'd never heard anyone. I'd seen some posters, but that's about it. I certainly weren't going to an NA meeting. But this book told me about the disease of addiction. It was the first time I'd ever heard of it. And the relief. I wasn't going there for a book on addiction, by the way. I was going there for a book on relationships. Because if my relationship was all right, then I'd be all right. If he'd just stopped using, I'd be able to stop. He is the problem. Then I won't have to prostitute either, because he won't be hounding me for money and all that nonsense. And I got that book, Women Are From Venus, Men Are From Mars, but I also got this addiction book. And I believe that it was a power greater than me put that book next to that one. Because I saw that book and I brought it back and I started reading it, and it told me that I had an obsessive compulsion to use drugs and I would not stop. I was obsessed and compulsed despite all negative consequences. I could be ripped off, I could be imprisoned, I could be assaulted, I could be raped, whatever, locked up. I would not stop using unless I applied a 12-step program. And it said, if you are an addict, please give yourself a break. And I read it and it told me about the irrational thinking. No one had ever told me that. No one had sat me down in a CDT and said, you are fucking mental. But I'll tell you what, when I came to NA, my first sponsor sat me down and just looked at me with a very straight face, and she was a bitch, but I love her for it. And she just went, you are fucking mental. And I did that, so like that, and laughed. And she went, I'm not laughing, I'm serious, you're fucking mental. You know, that woman saved my life. But this book told me, I've got something, I've got a solution. I've got an illness, but I've got a solution. Didn't like the disease word. I've got used to it. I don't mind it now. I went and looked it up and found out what it actually meant. A malfunction of an organism or a part of an organism. And fuck me, if my brain is not malfunctioning while I'm in that addiction, I don't know a better way to describe it, you know. It told me to find my tribe. And that's what I did. It said, look down these anonymous meetings lists and see where you're going to fit. It was all different ones. And I saw the one that said narcotics, and I thought, that might be for me. Maybe I can go there. And I went there and didn't like it at first. But this old timer said, if you don't like it, keep coming back. Keep coming back 10 times. You've nothing to lose. 10 times and then review it. So I did, you know, and I got used to it. And I'd started doing what people were telling me to do. And, you know, the miracles that have happened whilst being in this fellowship are just unbelievable. My changing, my reality has completely changed. The steps that I've done completely changed my reality, my beliefs, my thinking, my behaviour. I'm very, very boundaried. I'm quite well known for it in this fellowship. You know, I don't mind telling people to fuck off. I'll do it nicely at first, but if someone's not listening, it will end up being that. Because I got clean, not green. That's another thing I heard in this fellowship, you know. And we come in with all our behaviours and our baggage, don't we? And I've had to work on that stuff. I remember spending some time with Ray at a camp out and making some hot dogs and burgers and giving Ray, a hamburger and him saying, thank you. Please, can I have a hamburger? Thank you. I remember saying to this girl, fucking hell, did you hear that? Did you hear that? Fucking hell. Please and thank you. He's lovely. He's lovely saying please. And she said, that's normal behaviour, Lisa. That's what everybody should be saying. I was like, oh. You know, because I weren't used to that. Someone, especially a man talk, you know, I've learned a lot from people in here. And it hasn't always been rosy, but I'll tell you what, I always remember, you know, I think if you remember and you stay close to your using, one of my days using, one of the bad ones was being thrown into the garden of a house that I was working from. And it wasn't my house. So the person whose house it was could basically throw me out. And he threw me out in the middle of the night with like a pair of knickers on. And it was pouring down, it was winter. And I remember going to the letterbox and I was embarrassed because there was family houses nearby. It's on an estate, so there's families and kids and stuff. I remember saying, please, please let me in, please. And begging to be let into this house for more terrorising, basically, and more abuse. And it doesn't have to be that day. Do you know what I mean? The gifts that I've got, it doesn't have to be that way today. The gifts, you know, I've got my own house, I earn my own money. I've got my own responsibilities. I've had bad times in recovery. I've gone through things that we have to go through. You know, I lost my dad in recovery when I was 3 years clean. You know, but I thank this fellowship and the people in it that my dad saw his daughter clean. You know, and I miss him a lot. I think grief is a massive thing that we have to encounter in recovery, and it's very painful. And, you know, I miss my dad, but you know what? He saw me clean, and I could take his, died of cancer, and I could take his medication without stealing it. You know, I could help him in the hospital without trying to get something or get money at my mum. And that's a miracle of this fellowship, and I can be there for my mum today and try and help her as best I can. And now, I got diagnosed HIV positive in my first year of recovery, and I talk about this. I usually end up slotting it in really quick at the end, but it's quite important because HIV is my secondary disease. It's my secondary illness. It's not my primary illness. That's why it kind of comes last in my share, because my primary disease is the disease of addiction. That will kill me quicker than any other disease that I know of. But you know what? It's not always been easy, that stuff. And I got bad advice when I first told somebody. You know, I told somebody. I didn't know anybody who was HIV positive. And I told them, and they said, fucking hell, don't tell anyone. Don't tell anyone. You know, and I used to go into meetings early days and I used to talk about everything. Talk about fucking selling myself for sex, fucking everything. And I wasn't ashamed, because I'm quite bolshy like that. All of a sudden, I felt shame. And I was coming into meetings, and I wasn't holding... I was scared to hold your hands in the circle. I was scared to drink out of the cups. I was scared to hug people, in case they found out, and had stigma about it and all this. And then I went to a meeting, and I heard somebody share about being HIV positive. And I remember seeing how people love this guy and shared back to him, and I thought, wow, if he can share that and you're still loving him, maybe I can share it as well. You know, that's why I share it, because you know, I have to take medication for that or I'll die. And in the same way, I have to do this stuff or I'll die. You know, It's been quite a big part of my life. It's made me feel very hooked into all my insecurities as a woman, you know, as it would do if it was a man. And I think one of the main things that I heard on a share CD one time was that if I don't tell on my secrets tell on me. I'm kind of sharing that because if there's anyone in here that I've got secrets, it might not be an illness, it might be something else, it might be a childhood thing, it might be something you've done in active addiction, it might be you think you're a shit pet, whatever it is. Please share this stuff, not necessarily in a meeting if you don't feel safe to, but share it with somebody that you trust. You know, because this stuff manifests and it hibernates within you and it has a big impact. So I'm pretty open now about the way that I am and how I live my life. And you know, I'm just glad, really, really glad to be here. I've got such an amazing life today. I really have. And I wouldn't have that without all the experiences that I've had, you know. I've got an illness, I've got a secondary illness, but you know what, it makes me so grateful. Because I could have been born in a country, and many people are, where you can't get medication. Now, the new dawn of reality is, how do I look at things? What's my perception? Am I going to see the cloud, or am I going to see the silver lining? You know, and that's kind of how I suppose I try and live, and that's why I'm quite positive and quite upbeat, because there's usually a silver lining. You know, I did hope when I got diagnosed, I know I'm coming to the end, I did hope that I'd get a free bus pass or some benefits, but I didn't. Rail card, no. But you know what, I've got a new lease of life and gratitude of what I've got. So please, if you're new about or you're struggling with anything at all, talk to people, because somewhere in the world, maybe not here in this meeting, but somewhere in the UK or somewhere in the world, somebody will know somebody will know somebody. And I've had this happen a lot, who will have experienced and got through the exact same thing that you're going through. You know, and they'll be able to support you and help you through that so that you're not alone. This fellowship says NA, never alone, and we never need to be alone. So I'll leave it there. Thank you for asking me and listening to me. Thanks.
Lisa, just a few announcements. There's some literature in the room over the back there. Anyone wants any literature? If you're a newcomer, literature is free in your first 90 days. Anyone else has a small charge thereafter. We have got a literature person who will also be in that room. Okay, and also this meeting does have a website where you can download MP3s of past speakers. The address is www.naspeakers.co.uk. They're all free to download as many times as you like. If there are any NA related announcements, come and let me know, or flyers. Come and let me know and I'll give them to our GSR, who is Penelope at the front. This venue also has some rules. The venue asks that the kitchen is out of bounds to anyone who's not on the committee, and that no cups to be taken upstairs. This is no smoking building, so please not smoke by the door. And could we not block the entrance to the venue? There will not be any tea or coffee available after the break. We now have a break for about 15 minutes.
You're ready, Carl.
Thank you very much. Not so much about how many people are there.